F. Scott Fitzgerald once said, "The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposing ideas in one's mind at the same time." Well, that's what we're asking you to do. Now, I'm sure if we took a hand vote, most of us believe that Elvis Presley passed away August 16th, 1977. Would you raise your hands? All right. Now, may we see hands for those who think that Elvis may be alive. Very interesting. Thank you.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
All right, I must say that I was inclined to go along with the first group. But we think that by the end of our program, you too will be able to hold two opposing ideas in your mind. First, that Elvis Presley passed away in 1977, and secondly, that he still may be alive.
Let's pivot here a little bit. As I told you before we started the conversation, I wanted to talk about the Elvis death hoax as well as the history of this death hoax theory, because, you know, I don't want to compare this to UFOs, because we've already kind of talked about how this gets the short end of the stick, but I'm always fascinated sort of by the evolution of a movement, if you will, and that's what we have here, because there was no Elvis death hoax theory until August 16th, 1977. That's when it, you know, we know the actual birth of the theory. So right. We can kind of follow it over the last 35-plus years and find out the ebbs and flows, the ups and downs, how it's changed, the backbiting, the rises and falls and all that good stuff. And you've been in this since 88, so I mean, you've been doing this for 25 years, so you obviously have a firsthand account of what was going on in the trenches of the Elvis death hoax theory. Because there's a lot of people doing this. There's a lot of people looking into this. It's not just you alone. This network, a community of people that have looked at it. So I took a look at the timeline on your website, which actually is a fantastic piece of information, which traces the whole history of all this. And I'm going to kind of hit you with some of the interesting sort of ups and downs of all this. Hopefully you can enlighten us into more about it, right?
I'll certainly try.
There we go. Sounds good. Now, obviously, it all began on August 16th, 1977. I thought it was interesting, for starters, that you point out that right away there's this obscure book release called Elvis Presley Dead or Alive that was released by a Tupelo-based private investigator, Will Gema, just to sort of use that as the seed of all this. At what point, as far as you know, were people talking about the possibility that Elvis faked his death? Was it literally like August 17th, 1977? Were there people who, you know, read the news and were like, no, he faked it. It's fake. Like, at what point, when did it all really begin?
And actually, there have been people interviewed that said they had a strange feeling about it immediately, but they did not start talking about it then. The book you're talking about was written by a private investigator in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
And this book disappeared. And that's not the first time this has happened. Also, at that same time period, Gail Brewer Giorgio wrote her first book, Orion, which was a book of fiction about a singer named Orion Eckley Darnell that rose to fame and faked his death to get away. And then there was another book of fiction, so to speak, called The Presley Arrangement, written by Monty Nicholson. That was about Elvis faking his death, but it was written as fiction.
Okay.
Now, both of these books disappeared off shelves. Gail was actually paid, I think, $60,000 advance payment from her publisher, and they got this book out on the shelves, and it immediately disappeared. The story is that people in suits came in, bought up all the books from the bookstore, and no new ones were ordered by the bookstores, and which was very strange for them to do when they paid her such a big advance for that day to get this book out there. So who was making these books disappear? The government? We don't know. But when Orion and the Presley Arrangement first hit the bookshelves, some people managed to buy some copies before they disappeared. And the talk really started then. It was a little later in 1977 that this really, really took off. And the fire really wasn't lit under it full force for 10 years when Gail started writing non-fiction books about it, which
yeah.
She thought would be the truth of. So, you know, it took off almost immediately in 77 to some degree, but it really didn't get a fire lit under it hardcore for about 10 years. So,
okay. All right. So what do you make of this dude who first wrote the first book? Because 77 is really early. And just clear this up for me. The Orion book and the other book, that came out. Those came out in 77 also, or were they kind of a little bit later?
No, they were just a few months later.
Wow.
After this investigator wrote his. And I've never even got to see his. I mean, this one is so obscure that, I mean, I've never been able to find it. I can't even find somebody with, like, a digital copy of this thing. Now, I do have the book Orion and the Presley arrangement.
How do we, and I know this is probably, like, a ridiculous question, but I suppose I have to ask it. How do we even know the book exists? How do we, if it's essentially gone, do we know anyone who has a copy of it? I mean, where do we know about this book in the first place if no one can find it?
The original private investigator book called Elvis Presley, Dead or Alive?
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I can prove Orion and the Presley arrangement exist. I have those, and I have the stories about them disappearing from shelves and things. The original book, all we really have to go on is word of mouth about this book because it disappeared so fast that, you know, I really wish I could find a copy of this thing, but I guess that's never going to happen because I haven't done it yet.
Yeah, you should. Have you tried to track down this guy in Tupelo?
I've done some searches on the guy's name. I haven't been able to come up with it. And he has kind of a, you know, last name is, you would think he would be easy to find.
It sounds like a fake name anyway.
It could be, yeah.
Well, that's okay. So we can kind of almost put that to urban legend at this point, that whole thing.
Yeah.
But you point out also in the timeline, the pool house photo was taken in 77. So it seems like the spark was lit really early on all this. And then you mentioned that from beginning in 77, all these networks develop, publishing newsletters. Are these newsletters about whether or not Elvis faked his death, or were they just sort of like Elvis fandom newsletters?
No, they were. You have Steve Chances, Gail Burigeorgio, of course, was all of hers were about Elvis faking his death,
mm-hmm.
and possibly still being alive. There was a lady named Mary Smiley. Hers were about Elvis being alive. And then you have Phil Acheson, who started out back then, who has since become head of the Presley Commission, which is a commission that was put together to prove Elvis was alive. And he is the head of that. And they put out a 300-page report called the Presley Report. And I have that. And it's full of information about Elvis faking his death and all of the documentation to back that up. So most of those that came out then were all about Elvis faking his death.
That's amazing. This is like the zine. This is like almost the early era of the zine scene. So I guess people are putting out these newsletters and with sharing information, exchanging information about, you know, clues and stuff they've picked up from their research.
Correct. Yeah, they Gail Burigeorgio and Monty Nicholson were the first two to share information with one another about this whole thing, and then Gail and Monty started working with Phil Acheson, who then put the Presley Commission together. And then, you know, the Presley report that they put out, it tells you in there how many members there are to this thing that investigated, but it will only give you the names of like five of them. And, but I do have the report here. But most of them wanted to stay anonymous that were involved in this. So I don't even know who all was involved in the Presley Commission.
Okay. So clearly, if these guys are putting out newsletters and stuff, this is like an underground movement. You know, they're not just writing these newsletters and mailing them to each other. There's a
right.
whole group of people who are trying to figure this all out. Now, into the mix of all this, weirdness, comes Jimmy Ellis, who's a character throughout the entire saga. So, talk a little bit about Jimmy Ellis and how he figures into the Elvis death hoax.
Absolutely. Okay.
I told you I did my homework on this one, Marty.
You really did. I'm impressed. Okay. Jimmy Ellis, when he first came out, nobody knew his real name. Nobody knew he was Jimmy Ellis. He wore a mask on stage, and he went by the name Orion, which, of course, was the same as Gail's book about Elvis being alive.
Mm-hmm.
And he sounded just like Elvis. I mean, if anybody wants to go to YouTube and just type in Orion or Jimmy Ellis, he's all over the place now. But, and you can listen to him, watch him perform. But back then, he was just this guy that popped up. Nobody had a clue who he was. His only name was Orion, and he wore a mask on stage. He sounded like Elvis. He had the loud, fancy costumes like Elvis. And there were a lot of fans that went to his concerts, probably because he reminded them of Elvis.
Right.
But a lot of fans went to his concerts, and several had mentioned that Orion would leave the stage. He would be all sweaty, his armpits, his back, you know, would be sweaty. He would walk off stage for a moment and come right back, and his costume would be dry, and he would start right into the next song, and then he would leave stage, come back, and it would be the original guy again. And there, you know, there was speculation during all of this time that Elvis found a way to perform again by switching places on stage with Orion. One fan wrote that she ran onto Orion's bus one time, and there were two Orions in the back of the bus. One of them got up and ran into the bathroom. Thought he looked like Elvis Presley. So, you know, there's a lot of speculation as to what was going on with Orion then. Now in 1998, by that time, everybody knew who Jimmy Ellis was. He was no longer hiding behind a mask, or he was actually performing without his mask and going by the name Jimmy Ellis. But in 1998, he owned a pawn shop down in Alabama that him and his ex-wife owned together. And this part is speculation, but it is said that Jimmy Ellis was going to come forward and tell the world about Elvis and that he was alive. Whether that part is true or not, I don't know. But this part is definitely true. Someone walked into Jimmy Ellis's pawn shop, shot him and his ex-wife at point-blank range with a shotgun, didn't steal anything, didn't touch the cash register. There was apparently a lot of money in Jimmy's pocket that was not touched. Nobody took any gold jewelry from the pawn shop. They were just shot dead, and this guy left, and it was written up as attempted theft. And he was murdered. So,
wow.
Whether he was murdered because he was about to spill his guts about Elvis is totally speculation. But that's the Orion story.
That is weird.
Orion actually sang on the same label as Elvis, that Elvis started out on, which was Sun Records. And I have a couple of his LPs that he put out on the Sun label. He was a very talented man.
Now, what? I'm an old school wrestling fan, so I'm confused just about the mask part of this. What kind of mask was this guy wearing on? That's so bizarre. I mean, it's not exactly a normal thing. Even, you know, Kiss wearing face paint is unique. I mean, so wearing a mask is even more strange. What kind of mask was this?
This was more of a mask. It didn't cover his whole face. He had Elvis's hair, even. I mean, he had the black long hair, like styled just like Elvis. And you could see his jawline and his nose. The masks that he wore on stage were more like elaborate Lone Ranger masks.
Okay.
You know, they were decorated. They just covered the eye and jaw area. You could see the rest of him fine. But when you're on stage, it's dark in a concert hall. You have flashing lights. He had enough Elvis traits that him and Elvis could have traded places on stage, and it's a possibility. You know, I don't know if that happened or not. But there were several people that mentioned about the sweat stains and him coming right back out with his clothes were dry. And, well, something was going on. I don't know what.
We're going to, again, break the fourth wall a little bit. Here's just sort of a weird question that popped into my head as we've been talking today. What is it about Elvis that causes all of the impersonators? It seems like there's only a handful of celebrities, maybe Marilyn Monroe and Michael Jackson or something, but otherwise there's sort of only a handful of iconic characters that lend themselves to a myriad of celebrities, a myriad of impersonators. What is it about Elvis that kind of causes that?
Well, you know, Elvis was the greatest rags-to-riches story ever. You know, he came dirt poor. His family and him were kicked out of the projects. You know, I mean, they came from absolute nothing. They couldn't afford to eat. Elvis started out trying to drive a truck for Crown Electric Company. They had nothing, and he went to the greatest entertainer that has ever lived. I mean, who doesn't know the name Elvis anywhere?
Yeah.
Before Elvis, we had, what would we have? Jazz, rhythm and blues. You know, he came in and he created something that has completely changed the course of history as far as music goes. And people remember that. People know the struggles he went through to get to where we are now, you know,
yeah,
musically, what he created. And there was such electricity. People talked about going to Elvis concerts and the electricity you felt in the air and what an entertainer he was. And they're trying to get a piece of that. They're trying to feel a small piece of that by going to see the Elvis tribute artist. And there are some very good ones out there. But that, I think they're reaching to for that feeling again, you know.
Okay. Okay, so now we've kind of established here the Elvis death, August 16th, 1977. Then it's percolating in the underground, this discussion. And then, of course, ever the opportunist here in 1979, Geraldo Rivera, he has the Elvis cover-up segment on 2020. That probably got this into the minds of millions of people that probably hadn't even considered the Elvis death hoax theory yet or even heard about it, right?
That is correct, yes.
That put it on the map, essentially, is kind of the start of it all. And then there's this wave of books, as you point out, in the timeline throughout the 80s. You got Orion, this one, 1935, Where Are You?, Memphis Mystery, Requiem for Elvis, Fairy Tale, Is Elvis Alive?, The Death of Elvis, What Really Happened in 1991. So, amazingly, throughout the 80s, all these books are coming out about the Elvis death hoax.
Correct. And that's when the flame was lit that I was talking about. That's when it really took off. And that's when I got involved.
So clearly there was interest in all this. And
correct.
It's pretty remarkable. And I'm sure over the course of all this time, then there's other TV segments and stuff like that about this whole story.
Right. Yeah, there's been several. At this point, there's been many. So, there were several then, yeah.
Yeah, we could almost call this probably the peak period for the Elvis death hoax theory. Now, what was the sort of the mainstream opinion on all this? Is that really when all the lack of respect came from, you know, that time period where they were sort of like, get a load of this, and then they talk about it?
Yeah, it was. That is where they first started trying to make a joke out of all of this, and they succeeded in certain groups. Now, of course, Bill Bixby did his special in 1992, and his first special called The Elvis Files, at the end of the show, well, at the beginning of the show, let's back up, at the beginning of the show, he asked the audience, raise your hands, whoever thinks, you know, Elvis is alive, and he got three or four hands, and then he had people call in and vote over the phone. And at the end of that special, he asked the audience, you know, who do you think do you think Elvis is alive? And just about everybody raised their hands. And the poll that they did over the phone showed that 84% of the people who watched the special and actually listened to the evidence believed Elvis was alive. So at that point, we had 84% of the people calling in that believed Elvis was alive from the show. And that's where I think some people got nervous. They started trying to turn this into a big joke. If you were trying to hide a secret like this and you had 84% of the people starting to believe you were lying, you know?
Yeah.
I think that they purposely tried to turn this thing around. So.
Okay. All right. I see what you're saying. So it's growing. It's growing throughout the 80s. It kind of peaks, I guess, in the early 90s, and then there's the backlash about it all.
Right.
That kind of makes sense. Now, to circle back to the 79 Geraldo segment, what was the tenor of all that? Was he sort of presenting this, hey, listen, here's what's going on. People are saying this kind of thing.
Geraldo's whole thing was he was pointing out a lot of the same discrepancies that the rest of us use when we're trying to back up Elvis is alive. Now, he was listing the discrepancies of what happened when he was found, the stories that were told, you know, they were even questioning what book he was reading when he died. But they took all of the same type of discrepancies and evidence and information, and instead of coming to the conclusion on their show that Elvis is still alive, they used it to come to the conclusion Elvis was murdered.
Ah.
And that's where Geraldo was trying to take this. I have the entire transcript of that show.
Okay.
That was sent to me, and it's typed up. But Geraldo was trying to point to, you know, his question about the whole 2020 special was Elvis murdered?
Interesting. Okay, that's the cover-up part of the Elvis cover-up, that he's saying
right.
cover-up was murder. Interesting.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So then everyone started looking at this whole thing in a fresh light, and that's kind of where the additional aspect of the death hoax came about.
Exactly.
Now, what I thought was fascinating here in the timeline, it's just a tiny little piece, but as someone who's explored this topic with other guests, particularly my good friend Nick Redfern, I had to ask you about this. You have here, in the late 1980s, there's claims of Men in Black-like characters visiting Elvis fan clubs on two continents and threatening them, presumably to stop talking about the Is Elvis Alive theory. So tell me this story here.
There have been several reports of that, and one of the main reports, one of the people that did not mind coming forward with this is the president of the oldest Elvis fan club. Her name is Maria Columbus. She came forward and she told the story about how the men in suits, which it sounds to me like the same men in suits that made the books disappear from bookstores. They didn't want this story out. You know, Gail DiGiorgio's book disappeared. Monty Nicholson's book disappeared. Was no longer sold in stores. Sounds like it's kind of the same group of men that were trying to stop newsletters in fan clubs because some of the believers that Elvis was alive, like Maria Columbus and some of the others, were putting out newsletters within their Elvis fan clubs. You know, back then, fan clubs were different than they are now. You didn't go online and read, and, you know, everything came in the mail.
Yeah.
And they didn't want these mailers going out with what I would consider evidence that Elvis is alive. So there were several accounts told of where men came and told, you know, basically tried to scare them into not doing this, which is why I think that's happened a lot, not just with fan clubs, but...
Weird. Investigators as well. Now, what were these men like? Just like, did they seem like government agents? Were they, did they look like mafia types? I mean, what was the makeup of these MIBs, if you will?
According to Maria, she described them as being like CIA agents, which is a term she used. She didn't know they were CIA agents or FBI or whatever, but she said they had the earpieces, the dark suits, and she described them as looking like what she would consider CIA agents looking like, not what you would consider a mobster looking like, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. So, because she described the earpieces that they wore.
Okay, yeah. So a little more sharp, let's say.
Right.
Okay. So we're chugging along here on the evolution of this story. You know, it's percolating in the underground. The books explode. People are really talking about it. Then these researchers get together and they put together this Presley Commission. Is this sort of like the best investigation into the whole thing? Is this supposed to be like the definitive answer to the Is Elvis Alive question?
It was supposed to be the definitive thing, yes. Phil Aitchison, who was the head of the commission, he actually did some interviews on television pushing the information that the commission had decided on. The Presley report is something, it's funny that you bring it up because I have been trying to find a copy of this. It came out in 1994 and immediately disappeared. I mean, it's still mentioned on Amazon, but it says, not available. You can't get it. It's mentioned that it is a book, but you can't get it. And I've been trying to get my hands on a copy of this for 19 years, and I mean struggling. I've tried every avenue I could think of, and I just got a copy this year.
Oh, wow.
And this first time I've actually got to read everything in it. Of course, I've seen a lot of the bits and pieces of information in there, but I've never had it all together, and there's a lot of stuff in there I didn't have. There's actually a picture in there of what was supposed to be one of Elvis's safe houses where he stayed after August 77 and some things I hadn't seen before. But it took me 19 years to find a copy of this thing.
My God.
And you still can't get it. I mean, if anybody else out there knows how they can get a copy, good luck. Very hard.
But that makes that's maddening, though. I mean, aren't these that speaks to the ineffectiveness of the movement in a way. If this is the definitive answer to the Is Elvis Alive question, and no one can get a copy of it, That I don't understand, I guess. I'm befuddled. Well,
the thing is, what kind of powers are you going up against? If Elvis is in witness protection program, then it's the government's job to make sure he stays safe and hidden. So how much power are you actually fighting? You're fighting possibly the federal government. You're fighting Elvis Presley Enterprises, because they're certainly making a lot more money with him being dead than they would be if he hadn't died.
Yeah.
So they're not going to want him back. So what kind of powers are you fighting that can, you know, if they can make Gilbert Giorgio's book disappear and they can make Monty Nicholson's book disappear, then they could certainly make the Presley Report disappear. And they pretty much have. It's a pretty obscure thing to find.
Yeah, I suppose. Now, I don't suggest that you do this, because you don't probably own the I'm positive you don't own the copyright to the report, but hopefully someone who's listening does, one of the other investigators, whoever was behind the whole thing, if it's not in the hands of a publishing house. And I challenge you, I say to those folks, put it online then. If you own the rights to the book and you're worried about people not being able to get their hands on it, it's being taken down, just put it online. It'll go viral everywhere amongst folks, and it'll never go away. So, you know, we need that. I think that would be a critical turn of events. So if you're listening, Gail Brewer, Giorgio, or whoever owns the rights to this whole thing, put it out there so we all can get our hands on it and look at it. Are you friendly with these folks who are in, you know, these legends, let's call them, of the Elvis death hoax movement? Because you came in 1988. They were doing it like 11 years ahead of time. Do you know them? Couldn't you have called them up to get the book?
Actually, the only one that I have spoken to personally is Gail Brewer Giorgio. Me and her used to work together pretty closely on this. She sent me an actual Kodak copy of the Pool House picture on Kodak paper. She sent me a picture that used to be on display at Graceland of a watch, a gold watch that used to be on display. And the inscription on the watch said to Colonel Parker from Elvis, and then it said 1956 to 1980. And, of course, this watch had disappeared since then. Nobody knows where it is, but I have a photo of it that Gail personally sent me, also on Kodak paper. And, you know, why it would have been inscribed 1956 to 1980 if he died in 1977, we don't know. But me and Gail worked together for a long time through the phone. I never got to meet her in person, but we called each other. And she gave me a little direction when I wrote my book and helped me. And then I lost contact with Gail. From what I understand now, from what some people have told me, she is ill. She was going blind. She has retired, and I have not been able to get a new phone number for her to talk to her anymore. And I don't know how to contact Monty Nicholson or Phil Aitchison or anybody, except maybe through the internet. And I haven't had any luck with that. So.
Okay, that's too bad. So it sounds like a kind of a disparate community in a way. You're carrying the torch here for these folks who, you know, you're standing on their shoulders, I suppose, right?
Right, and that's why I came up with the name that I came. You know, we had the Presley Commission, the Presley Report, and I feel like I was carrying the torch on for these people, and so I came up with the Presley Assignment, because I feel like it's an assignment that I need to complete. So
there you go. Nice.
That's how I came up with this. So.
Okay, now, I thought this was interesting. We follow the evolution of all this, and clearly you have a fantastic overview of it all, because right on the front page of the ElvisConspiracy.webs.com website, you say right here, in the 1990s, a lot of things changed in the Elvis conspiracy world, and having looked at the timeline, it's clear. It seems to kind of slow down quite a bit. All these books are coming out in the 80s, the special happens in the 90s, and then it's sort of this lull in all this stuff. And you point out that the markers around Graceland, they get changed probably because of all the hype around the misspelling. People
Right.
start changing their stories. Evidence Mm-hmm. starts getting discredited. Bill Bixby changes his story. Investigators and eyewitnesses either disappeared or died. Talk about that and just sort of talk about the malaise that befell the community in the 90s.
Well, one of the things is, I spoke to you earlier about the two paramedics that went to Graceland. Of course, we spoke about Jimmy Ellis or Orion being murdered. One of the paramedics, that they both said it was not Elvis on the floor, but you have one that stories say, of course, I did not know any of these gentlemen, but the stories are that one of them was going to come forward and tell that was not Elvis and tell us what he had found out about this since it all came down when he got to the hospital. And he was pushed out of an airplane.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he was murdered. The other one has since died on his own, but, there was a lot of strange things that happened during that time period. Yes, all of the markers around Graceland in the 1990s, from 1977 until the 1990s, they all had the single A spelling of Aaron, and they've all been changed to match the grave marker. Every one has been changed to the double A spelling, and that happened in the 90s when this really took off.
Interesting. Is it possible, if we're using the idea that the misspelling indicates that the grave is empty, is it possible then that maybe he died in the 90s and then they put the body in there and then they adjusted the gravestone because it was now accurate?
It's not impossible.
I like the way you think, Mickey. Well, have you ever thought of that, though?
No, actually, I hadn't even considered them doing it for that reason. I always assumed that it was done to put to rest any confusion as to why they would have been spelled differently than the grave itself.
Okay. Give that some thought. Float that one out there. See what people think. That's my Elvis death theory. Now, you mentioned Jimmy Ellis, and you mentioned the guy who got pushed out of the airplane. Are there a lot more mysterious deaths, or you say disappearances, too? What does that all mean? People just drop out of the field?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as we Monty Nicholson wrote The Presley Arrangement, he did several interviews, some of which are on my YouTube channel, talking about mysterious things that happened to him, photos that disappeared. And Monty has since disappeared. I mean, he hasn't written anything. He hasn't showed up in interviews for, I don't know how long, maybe 20 years or more. I mean, a lot of people just dropped out of investigating this altogether that were really diehard into it at one point.
Strange. Now, do they ever give any indication? I suppose if they dropped out, they don't give any indication, but do they ever sort of reach out to anybody years later and be like, oh, you know, it wasn't worth it, or I got threatened, or I got paid off, or anything like that? I suppose we'd know that, right?
Yeah, I would think so. No, I haven't heard of anything like that. They just quit. No explanation.
Maybe someday I'll hear that you've disappeared, and then I'll find out that you've actually just been given like $1 million by the Presley estate to quiet down.
They haven't tried that in the last 25 years, so we'll see.
Yeah, who knows what they're waiting for. So it goes kind of quiet in the 90s, which I think is interesting. Because also, it's kind of weird, because the 90s were like this big boom for the paranormal and everything, so it's odd that the Elvis thing goes down under, but I suppose in a way it isn't that odd because it got overshadowed by X-Files and UFOs and Bigfoot and sort of paranormalia, and therefore this sort of moves into the alternative history realm.
Right. Yeah, I think so.
So the 90s is, in a way, the nadir. Then we get this, the emergence of the internet, which I'm sure really changed the whole face of the Is Elvis Alive research community in a way, because it changed everything beyond just the paranormal and the esoteric. It changed the world. So I guess talk a little bit from your perspective on how the explosion of the internet changed this research community.
Wow. You would think, and I've mentioned this to people before, you would think that it would have made things easier. but it was actually easier in the 80s. There are a lot of people being fooled and confused these days. You have this Jesse character, that we talked about earlier that has fooled, I don't know how many people. He has a lot of followers, even though the DNA evidence proves otherwise. You have a lot of people, that think he's Elvis. There's another gentleman named John Kottner who has done multiple YouTube videos singing and sounding like Elvis. And a lot of people think that he's Elvis. The problem is all of his videos are done to still pictures. You never actually see his lips moving. You don't know who's doing the singing.
Mm.
You see still pictures of who he says is him with a voice singing that sounds like Elvis. And it has actually gotten more complicated because if you knew how many messages I got on a daily basis of people telling me, Elvis is on Facebook under the name John Burroughs. Elvis is on Facebook under the name Jesse Presley. He's on Facebook under the, and he's got like 700 Facebook accounts. And it's actually made things more complicated than they were back when you just had, you had to go through actual documentation and photographs.
Yeah.
Instead of listening to all of this hype.
I can imagine, yeah. The way you say that makes me think of the, you know, I kind of cut my teeth on the UFO phenomenon. It's kind of the same way. It's like you can't, you know, you can't turn on your internet without being bombarded with some ridiculous new UFO picture. So I can imagine it's kind of the same with the Elvis thing. You can't escape it.
Yeah, I get pictures every day sent to me. All of a sudden, every man on the planet who has gray hair and a gray beard has became Elvis. And people go out and take pictures of just anybody that looks like Santa Claus and send them to me and say, hey, could this be Elvis? I'm like, oh, come on. I don't have time.
Yeah. Well, that raises another sort of meme of the entire Elvis death hoax theory, and that is the, you know, it's become cliched almost, the Elvis sightings.
Right.
You know, talk a little bit about that phenomenon, because it certainly is a phenomenon. It's not something that's just a one-off thing. I mean, this is something that's kind of gone on and on and on over the last 35 years.
You know, it is so hard to say which ones may be legitimate, because there are probably hundreds of them. I can tell you that the ones I find to be legitimate personally are the ones from the late 80s in Kalamazoo, Michigan. It was reported that Elvis had bought an office building there. And actually, Elvis actually said on stage one time, before he supposedly passed, that he was joking with the audience and said, you know, I'm living in Kalamazoo, Michigan now. And nobody knew what the heck he said that for. But there were reports that he had bought an office building in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And that has since become a joke too, because yeah, people that got on TV saying, yeah, Elvis came to Burger King in Kalamazoo and ordered a Whopper with no onions and all this stuff, and they turned it into a joke. But there was a lady named Kelly Burgess that was big into the investigation, and she heard about this office building back in the 80s, and she went to it, and she went in, and she started walking around searching, and she claims that she walked into an office, and Elvis was there, and she saw him. She did a very long interview on this that the transcript is online. She has since passed away, but the transcript is in several places if you Google it, and it's on my website. But I think that was legitimate. There's an office building in Kalamazoo, Michigan to this day, under the name Elvis Presley. There are properties behind Graceland. Now, Graceland itself is, the taxes on it that are paid every year are paid, if you search the court documents, they're paid by EPE, which is Elvis Presley Enterprises. But there's some properties behind Graceland with trailers on them that are still being paid under the name Elvis Presley, not EPE.
Hmm.
But I think that was a legitimate sighting. There was another lady that spotted who she thought was Elvis, in a restaurant. And I forget what city this was in, but the video, they recreated the whole thing using Johnny Hara, who was a Elvis impersonator. And they used him in the video to kind of recreate for television. But they have the actual photographs she took of the person she took pictures of, not Johnny. But I think that was a legitimate. But I think most are wishful thinking or jokes being played, things like that.
Yeah.
But I think there's a couple legitimate ones out there.
Yeah, and like you said, a personal encounter with a stranger, you can't really do much more than, you know, with that. So it's hard to
right.
really do much. It's too bad that, you know, like I said, it's become cliched at this point, the Elvis sighting. So it's just another stab at this poor
bemoaned theory. I feel bad for the Elvis death hoax theory in a lot of ways. It gets kicked while it's down too often.
I agree.
I know you do. Now, I do have to take to task, though, the Elvis death hoax theory, because in the timeline here, there's one point. Now, every theory has crazy elements to it, and people who go a little overboard. And in the timeline, it says, the motion pictures Home Alone and Finding Graceland are widely discussed on message boards. A bearded Elvis allegedly appears in Home Alone, while in Finding Graceland, many believe the hobo seen on the train is also Elvis. I mean, that feels like it's just kind of reaching for straws, though, don't you think? We kind of don't need any more of that kind of discussion, right?
Right. The hobo thing is, you know, I don't know why anybody ever thought that was him, because you can't tell anything from still pictures that you freeze from the movie. Now, the scene from Home Alone in the airport, this guy looks like Elvis. I mean, nobody has ever came forward and said who he really is, to my knowledge. He does look like Elvis. I do have a video of it on my YouTube channel for people to check out and, you know, make their own decision on that. But, you know, we don't have anything to back any of this up, so I don't push the issue.
Right, you know, right. It seems kind of like it's already a put-upon theory, and that's the kind of thing that doesn't seem to help much, because that's when people's minds totally close to the whole thing, because they can't wrap their mind around that. And
exactly.
You know, so it's a tough nugget to the whole thing. Now, that's all going on in the 2000s. People are talking about it on the internet and stuff. It's sort of entrenched itself in the mind of America, if not the world. People know about the Elvis death hoax theory. Then this whole DNA thing explodes. I'm surprised, I guess, to hear about the DNA evidence and find out that it really, A, didn't get much publicity as far as I can tell. I never really heard anything about it. And B, that it hasn't really been followed up upon. Again, this should seriously break this thing open in a big way, but it obviously didn't do the trick, right? Why?
Yeah, it didn't. Well, you know, these things keep getting buried deep, covered up. You know, Fox News broadcast this thing. It should have exploded that day, really. But they never, you know, most stories that you'll see on Fox News, if it's a big story, they're going to replay it 8,000 times, you know. And this one was shown one time. It disappeared. People forgot about it. You know, there's some huge cover-ups going on. You know, why didn't this explode? That's what I want to know. I wish I knew how to follow up and do my own test there.
Yeah.
Wish I knew how to do that.
Yeah, that would be ideal if we could, if, you know, further DNA testing would be really a critical step that could be taken to try and get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, I would love to do that and see how far I can carry it, where the ball got dropped, you know, in the past. I would like to see how far I could push it before they tried to make it disappear or whatever.
Or make you disappear.
Yeah, well.
Now,
they don't want to do that. I have things in a safe deposit box that they don't want to to be found out about. So
I don't even know. Now you've tempted me way too much, Mickey. What I know you don't want to say, because that's the insurance on your life, but give me a hint as to what could be secreted away, you know, that you know would come out in the event of your demise, that we should know about.
It's just things that back up everything I've already said.
Okay.
But it, you know, it's proof that can back things up. It's not just hearsay. It's not just you know.
All right. Now, okay. I realize having asked you that I wasn't going to get an actual answer. So now this is kind of a ridiculous question, but I suppose I'd be remiss if I didn't ask it. You've been doing this for 25 years. Have you ever heard from anybody who claims to be Elvis, you know, thanking you for your work, encouraging you to do your work further? Maybe that's someone who's associated with Elvis, maybe not Elvis himself. Have you gotten any sort of positive reinforcement from anyone who claims to be connected to the whole thing?
Not anybody that I can, let me put it this way. Not from him himself, and not from anybody I could substantiate that they are who they say they are. I get messages and calls from people that claim to be his illegitimate kids that want to back me up and help me out. And just like there are 700 Elvises on Facebook, Elvis has got 200 children.
So, oh, yeah, yeah.
It's not anything that you can really – I have no proof to as to who these people are or anything. I have had phone calls from people saying, hey, good job, like what you're doing. You know, I'm kin to Elvis. But nobody's ever sent me any proof to who they are. So, and then the people that are directly involved, you know, like Priscilla, Lisa Marie, Ginger, they're not going to call and thank me.
Yeah,
they're trying
exactly.
to keep this quiet, you know, so.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. yeah, and presumably they're not going to agree to a DNA sample or anything crazy like that.
Right.
We're up against a wall on that one as well. So then the timeline, it seems like you put it up around the late aughts, because it kind of peters out around the 2006-2007 period where there's talk of various upcoming books and stuff from various researchers. What's been going on, you know, in the period from 06-07 to, you know, here today on November 12th, 2013?
Unfortunately, that's where I'm trying to turn things around now. I've gotten really more involved, even more than I used to be in the last year, because I'm wanting to turn this thing around because it hit a brick wall. It stopped around the time you're talking. Since then, it's mainly been Facebook groups and online news groups, forums, and they get so ridiculous with the things they talk about that I get confused trying to go in there and read things about, you know, it's just gotten out of hand. People are blowing things out of proportion. You know, so many people on there talking about Elvis's twin brother never really died. He's alive. And, you know, it just goes so many different directions now that I've gotten more involved in the last year than I even used to be because I want to get this thing back on track. It's off track.
Yeah, it seems that way.
And we have hit a brick wall because of these things. So I want to change that.
All right. Well, you're doing a good job so far. I mean, you're really, like I said, you're carrying the torch for this story in a big way. And you do mention, you kind of, I kind of feel what you're getting at here because you say, on the website, you posted this on Valentine's Day 2013. So, February 14th, about 5 months ago, I think. What is it today? The 11th. So about 9 months ago.
Yep.
That you say, if anyone has any logical ideas of what our next step should be, please let me know. I don't want to still be doing this in another 25 years. But I can imagine it must be exhausting in a way to have continued this for so long.
Yes, it is. You hit the nail on the head with that one, Tim. It's like, you know, I have a full-time job where I work. I consider this my full-time job and my other job the place I have to go to pay bills. But I spend as much time doing this as I do going to my actual job. So it is exhausting because there's a lot of hours put into all of this. So.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now what you say, you know, you're asking here for logical ideas on what the next step should be. What do you personally think that next step should be? You know, do you have any ideas, about where this needs to go next? There's not much you can really do. It's a hard, real mystery to crack in a lot of ways.
It is because at this point, we already have two DNA tests that much of the public that are on the other side refuse to believe was legitimate. So if you don't believe DNA testing, where do you go from there? Because that's a very hard thing to dispute. So where do you go from there? Do you actually have to go out and find Elvis and get his fingerprints on a glass that where he's been drinking something and say, hey, now, I mean, it's so hard to go to the next step because everything has been touched on at this point, and you still have people that refuse to believe the evidence. So the next step is so difficult to come up. That's the reason I ask people on the website, hey, there's probably people out there a lot smarter than me. What should the next step be?
Yeah, exactly. Well, folks, send in your ideas if you have any. Now, I thought about that. Has there been any consideration to some kind of class action lawsuit from Elvis fans against Graceland or Elvis Presley Enterprises, you know, for fraud or defrauding the public, you know, maybe by selling memorial items
revolving around Elvis if he's actually faked his death. Maybe there's some kind of grounds for a lawsuit there. Have you given any thought to that?
I've thought about it. There hasn't been any, you would have to have money, first of all.
Yeah.
This is something that would be dragged out in court for many years.
Mm-hmm.
There have been lawsuits from people that claim to be kin to Elvis that are trying to get DNA from Lisa Marie to prove that they are kin. There's this lady that calls herself Eliza Presley that says she's a half-sister to Elvis. She wants to match DNA. She has taken this to court two or three times, and they actually did open the case. They actually did reopen the estate of Elvis Presley Enterprises, and then it got kicked out of court because the laws changed in the state to where that particular court didn't handle this kind of case anymore, and she was supposed to start over. And I mean, these things can be dragged out longer than I'm going to live.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard to, it's a very hard thing to do.
Okay. That seemed to be my only general idea here for what kind of recourse to take next, because it is a difficult, it is a very difficult story, so.
It very much is so, yes.
And generally, you know, we kind of close the program here with the what's next for you, and we're kind of stumped on that here just talking you and I, but what's next for Mickey Moran? What are you planning on doing next? You just launched this YouTube channel recently, so you're putting out the YouTube videos. You're trying to raise awareness again, maybe get a fresh start on the Elvis death hoax theory, right?
Correct. Like I say, I got more into it in the last year. In 2013, I've really dug more into this. I've done a lot more work on websites, YouTube channels. I've gotten more involved in the Presley assignment on Facebook and Twitter. And in 2014, I want to take a trip to Memphis. I want to talk to some people firsthand, instead of just reading books. And, you know, I want to talk to retired members of hospital staff that were there. I want to talk to anybody that might know something, but I would like to take a trip down there and interview some people one-on-one. And, you know, I don't know what else. In order to raise awareness, what I'm doing now online seems to be all I can do online. As far as, you know, my YouTube videos are out there. I describe everything in detail in those. So what is next? Should it be a documentary made for television? I mean, Bill Bixby tried that already, but it was a long time ago. So I've got ideas floating in my head, and I don't know which direction to go in yet, but I do want 2014 to put this back in the mainstream and take away the parts of it that were turned into jokes and get it back on track.
Exactly. There you go. Erase the stigma surrounding the Elvis death hoax theory. Now I've been calling it the Elvis death hoax theory all this time. Is there a preferred nomenclature for the theory in general? Is that okay what I've been saying, or is it something else?
No, I don't think there's anything preferred. I use Elvis conspiracy.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't think there's a preferred.
I probably should have asked you that question 2 hours ago, but.
No, I think we're good.
All right. And we should definitely plug here, obviously, elvisconspiracy.webs.com. There's links all over Banal of America to that. On YouTube, it's the Presley Assignment, so just punch that in on YouTube. And I'm looking right here, folks. If you're looking at the website, go to elvisconspiracy.webs.com. Scroll down right under the picture of Elvis, the wanted poster, and there is a link to the Google Docs page, which contains Mickey's book, The Elvis Conspiracy Encyclopedia, and then right under that, the FBI files on Elvis. So you can look at both those and educate yourself on the subject. You know, don't just take Mickey's word for it. Don't take my word for it. Go look at it yourself. Stop dismissing this story because the mainstream media tells you to. Look at it yourself and make up your own mind, right, Mickey? That's the real message here.
Absolutely. That is the real message, because this is being covered up by powerful people, and in order to learn, we have to do it on our own.
Absolutely. That could be the motto of this program in general. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, Mickey. I really do appreciate it. You gave us a wealth of time and really helped us put together really a definitive conversation about this Elvis death hoax conspiracy. I've been intrigued by it for a long time, but like I said, I didn't know nearly enough about it until I looked at your work. And now, having talked to you, I feel like I could actually talk to somebody else about it and hold my own. And I got to give you credit, man. You can tell just from looking at the site and just from talking to you, that this is a labor of love. As you said, you're not in this to make money or anything. You're really just trying to get the word out and trying to do good work. And I can't give you enough credit, especially standing up against the giggle factor and the skeptics and the powers that be that want to hold this story down. A lot of lesser folks would have turned tail and run, but you've been doing this for 25 years, man. I can't give you enough props for that. So thank you so much for coming on Banal of America Audio, and please do keep in touch and keep us posted on further developments on this story.
I absolutely will, and I want to thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed my time, and I will definitely, if anything new comes along, I'll be getting in touch with you.
Awesome.
That does it for this edition of BOA Audio Season 8. Big, big thanks to Mickey Moran for coming on the show and giving us so much time. In fact, that was the longest interview that Mickey Moran has ever done. So kudos to him and big thanks as well. You can find out more from Mickey Moran at thepresleyassignment.com. Pretty simple, all one word, thepresleyassignment.com. Check it out. Moving right along now, it would be time for BOA Audio listener feedback, but I am really shoehorning this episode in to my very packed schedule, and we're going to roll out the holiday special in just a few short days, so the sooner we can turn around and get this program out to folks, the better, and as such, we are going to eschew listener feedback here on this edition of the program. However, I definitely want to hear from all of you folks out there and get your thoughts, not only on this episode, but the season so far here on BOA Audio. So here are the ways you can reach out to me. You can write to boaaudio@hotmail.com or head on over to banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com, and click the contact button. If you want something a little more interactive, you can join up at the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. You can also find that by clicking the forum button at Banal of America. In addition to those three options, you can also find me on Facebook and Twitter. Just punch in Banal, B-I-N-N-A-L-L, and I will pop right up. Feel free to befriend me, follow me, or poke me. It's all good, and I'd be happy to have you as part of my online circle of friends. And finally, check out Banal of America on Facebook. Just punch in Banal of America. The page will pop right up. Lots of great discussions going on there regarding the program, future episodes, past episodes, and esoteric news. So feel free to like Banal of America on Facebook. Up next, please allow me to take a moment and thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff, Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Jovi, Tina Senna, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, our webmaster Ray Weigel, and our graphics guru Jeremy Boston. At BOA right now, we've got an all-new Trickster's Realm from Regan Lee, and I'm under the impression that Bruce Pretty will have an all-new Esoteric Apostate coming at you in the not-too-distant future as well. Plus, more columns from the BOA staff, and hopefully, once my schedule clears up a little bit, I can start doing some writing again at Banal of America. I have a lot of things to say, but not much time to say it, so hopefully in 2014, those circumstances will have changed. Now comes the time in the program where I take my hat off and pass it around to the BOA audio listeners and ask you to help us out via a donation to the BOA franchise. How do you do that? That's simple. Head on over to Banal of America and click the PayPal button. It's right there on the right-hand side of the screen. That'll take you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It's safe, secure, and simple. But if you don't trust PayPal and you want to make a donation via snail mail, you're in luck because we have the Banal of America P.O. Box. And the address for that is Tim Benall, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. And you can find the complete address at Benall of America right under the PayPal button. If you do mail us a donation, folks, please make it payable to Tim Benall and not Benall of America. And please include some form of correspondence so I can reach out to you and thank you for your donation. Once again, it bears repeating, my friends, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards Benall of America and BOA Audio to help keep the entire franchise up and running, freely available, and commercial-free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. On the next edition of BOA Audio, as I said, it should be coming at you in a few short days, hopefully December 22nd, December 23rd or so. And with those dates in mind, it should come as no surprise that the next edition of BOA Audio is the 9th annual BOA Audio Holiday Special featuring the iconic Stanton Friedman. I'm happy to report that the 9th annual BOA Audio Holiday Special has been recorded. It is in the books, and it is almost ready to be unleashed upon the BOA Audio listeners. Once again, we turned the vast majority of the program over to listener-submitted questions, and we got a ton of questions from BOA Audio listeners. I believe at the end of the special, we clocked in at 20 submitted questions and then a whole bunch of additional questions that sort of stemmed from Stanton's answers to those questions. So it's a jam-packed addition to the program, covering a whole bunch of areas that I never would have thought to ask Stanton Friedman, but the BOA Audio listeners were curious to know about. Stuff like crop circles, the private space industry, and even Bigfoot are genres that are explored with the father of modern-day ufology, Stanton Friedman, on the 9th annual BOA Audio Holiday Special. It is the holiday tradition like no other. It is BOA Audio's celebration of the season with the iconic Stanton Friedman coming at you in just a few short days at Benall of America. Stay tuned, my friends. And on that note, we close the book on this edition of the program. Big, big thanks once again to Mickey Moran. Check out the Presley assignment, folks. You definitely want to dig on into that. And, of course, enormous thanks to all you folks out there, the hardcore BOA Audio listeners who have supported this program through thick and thin. This has been a season for the books so far, and it's only getting wilder and weirder as the time goes on. Thank you for your enduring support of this program, and thank you once again for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Benall, thanking you for listening and signing off.